Now that Joe Manchin has retired, the two most competitive Senate races are the Montana and the Ohio races. And the reason is because Democrats have mostly abandoned those states as being competitive at the presidential level. So Sherrod Brown's kind of on his own.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Tuesday, March 19th. Today, I'm talking politics with Abby Livingston. It's a big primary day in the very important state of Ohio today, where the MAGA and establishment wings of the Republican Party are fighting over who gets to run against Democrat Sherrod Brown for Senate in November. Why should you care? Well, as Abby explains, Brown has been a survivor as his state has drifted red. And if he hangs on, he could save Democratic control of the U.S. Senate come November. Abby and I also discussed the fate of the House bill that would ban TikTok from the U.S., which is now facing scrutiny in the Senate. Will it survive? Abby and I game it out. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode, The Powers That Be. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/powersthatbe, netsuite.com/powersthatbe. That's netsuite.com/powersthatbe. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome to the Powers That Be. You're in luck today because Abby Livingston is here to talk to me about that cherished American institution, the United States Senate. Thanks for joining me, Abby.
It's good to talk the Senate with you, Peter.
We're going to talk later about where the House legislation that would ban or force the sale of TikTok might go in the Senate. But first, Abby, welcome. I want to geek out to you a little bit about the Senate map in 2024. Democrats are playing defense. They've got to defend some tough incumbents like John Tester in Montana. There's that toss-up open seat in Arizona now that Kirsten Sinema is retired. But, you know, Pennsylvania could be hard. Jackie Rosen in Nevada could be hard. Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin could be hard in a presidential year with, Republicans showing up to vote for Trump. But what's interesting is that Democrats could once again be saved by Cleveland Guardians fan Sherrod Brown in Ohio. Abby, the Ohio Republican Senate primary is today. And it is a three-way race. It's really competitive between the top two in the race. Matt Dolan is a Republican who has the support of the Ohio GOP establishment. Rob Portman, former senator, Governor Mike DeWine. And then on the MAGA side of the equation, you've got Bernie Moreno, who's backed by Trump, J.D. Vance, Jim Jordan. He's going full MAGA. I think he's like a car dealer. In the last few days, a great kind of old school pre-Trump political scandal broke with Bernie Moreno, which is that there was some leaked data from the website Adult Friend Finder. And apparently Moreno back in 2008 had created a profile seeking to have some fun with a young man. The reason I chuckled at that scandal isn't because we need to dig into it, but it did remind me of some of those like early internet political scandals, like George Allen, Macaca, that thing broke on YouTube, or like John Sweeney in upstate New York, like getting busted, like showing up at a frat house and some kid took pictures of him with a digital camera. He eventually lost to Kirsten Gillibrand. Anyway, I was taking pleasure in that. But what do the polls show? And which Republican does Sherrod Brown want to run against here?
Well, and to be clear, other news organizations have not confirmed the AP report on Moreno. But generally speaking, the race seems to be within the margin of error in a lot of polls. It's anyone's game coming out of this. But now that Joe Manchin has retired, the two most competitive Senate races are the Montana and the Ohio races. And the reason is because Democrats have mostly abandoned those states as being competitive at the presidential level. So Sherrod Brown's kind of on his own. That said, to answer your question, Democrats have gotten involved into this race running ads against Bernie Moreno, accusing him of being too conservative. Well, that's not running against him. That's actually sort of indirectly boosting him in a Republican primary because they would like to face him. Back in 2022, this was a very controversial tactic for Democrats, but it actually panned out and worked well. The reason it's controversial is if Democrats want to go and get the most right-wing, controversial nominee on the other side, they run a very high risk of that person actually coming to the Senate. And so, but there has been not that much commentary about it this term, which means Democrats seem to have kind of signed on with it. So it's this Senate race is one that you and I have seen in format for over, I guess now, almost 14 years, where Republicans blow a seat because they've got such a fractured primary. Now, Republicans have sometimes learned how to fix them and move on, and they get the preferred candidate through. But in this case, there is definitely a split between the MAGA establishment and the Ohio establishment.
Yeah, this is something we've seen play out in Ohio a few times now. I mean, J.D. Vance's primary was very competitive. I think Dolan was in that race as well. And we didn't really know until the end that he was going to be their nominee. What I'm also interested in is the endurance of Sherrod Brown. I mean, he has, as a Democrat, very populist, very pro-labor, you know, kind of like the shaggy, mop-haired, Mr. Smith goes to Washington type. He, in 2018, I was out there covering the race at the time, he beat back Jim Renacci, who was kind of a dud of a Republican candidate. But 2018 nationally was like the resistance year. That was a huge midterm wave for Democrats. The Senate map was tougher for them that year. Sherrod Brown hung on. But interestingly, Ohio, even though it was like a Dem-heavy year, just continued its like march to the right. Republicans won some contested House seats they thought they would lose. I'm thinking of Ohio's first district. Mike DeWine won the governor's race against Richard Cordray, who thought he had a shot. And then Sherrod Brown comes in, and he wins his Senate race by, I think, like 8 points or something, 7 or 8 points. Are Democrats more bullish on him than John Tester?
I generally hear them categorized together, unless okay. Binary, that they're sort of in a tier of their own. These are two candidates who came, or senators who came in 2006, and that was sort of a dream team slate of Democratic candidates, and they keep winning re-election. And they could not, and to use an Ohio term, they could not manufacture a better candidate than Sherrod Brown. He is in touch with the locals. His wife is a prominent journalist and columnist. He wears suits made in the United States and lets everyone know it. But at the same time, the last time he ran on the presidential ballot, and this is Tester as well, was in 2012 when there was a presidential and there was a symbiotic Obama operation in Ohio. And that is not the case. I mean, I could be eating my words in the fall and maybe the presidential will be competitive. But what is so challenging is Donald Trump just brings voters to the polls who we don't see coming. And so he is going to have to either outperform his opponent and have voters who come and just vote for him, or, you know, who is the Trump Sherrod Brown voter? So this is a very complicated race. And can he defy gravity is an open question. They could not have more confidence in his abilities, but there is a question of whether this environment's just going to be too strong.
Yeah, look, I would say comparing to Tester, the advantage Sherrod Brown would have in comparison is there are actually black people that live in Ohio, especially up in Cuyahoga County around Cleveland. The state's like 12% black, and like Sherrod Brown has, you know, been able to appeal to those voters over the years. Remember, like, people think of union types as just like lunch bucket white people. unions are increasingly Hispanic and Black in this country, if not a majority. And so his appeal to labor has helped him there. The bear case for Sherrod in Ohio is what you're talking about, which is the so much of the state is non-college white people. I think in the 2018 Senate race, whites without a college degree made up like 55% of the vote, and, you know, and those are Trump voters. And they voted for Renacci in that race. And Sherrod was able to sort of hold him down by running up the score with other people. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for him. It's obviously not competitive presidential state like it was when you had the Obama machine there. But I don't know. There's something about Sherrod Brown where he's been able to sort of create a rapport with voters. They seem to trust him. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think that that has one potential to save Democrats on the map in November. I would probably, if I had to choose, put my money on Brown over Tester, although I do like John Tester's flat top haircut. Abby, I want to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to talk to you about TikTok.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to The Powers That Be, everybody. I'm talking politics with Abby Livingston. Abby, we know that that bill that would either ban TikTok or force a sale sailed through the House last week, you know, kind of blew the doors off. It now heads to the Senate. Everyone keeps saying it has an uncertain fate in the Senate, and I was sort of like trying to read about why and make some phone calls. What's your take? I mean, is this thing dead in the Senate? Does it have a chance? I do think that all the narrative about the TikTok ban, and I wrote about this for The Best and the Brightest last night, if people want to go check it out, I mean, kind of ignores the fact that like we're like immersed in news cycles about TikTok right now, but this would have to pass the Senate, then they would have to reconcile the bill with the House, then a new bill would have to go to the president, and then the president would have to sign it, theoretically. That's if it doesn't get challenged by TikTok and end up in courts like it did in the Trump administration. I mean, this could take forever, but in the near term, what does this look like in the Senate?
So it passed the House overwhelmingly and quickly, and that was not an accident. There are two committees that oversee this issue, and one is the Energy and Commerce Committee, and the other is the China Select Committee. And the leaders of those committees were very conscious of moving fast and working together, and they choreographed classified hearings that obviously we were not privy to, to help add to that sense of momentum. And so you just had this kind of train was on the tracks leaving the station feel in the House last week. And then it lands in the Senate, and the Senate does what the Senate does, which is it looks down on a House bill and looks for ways to make it better. And the chairwoman, Maria Cantwell, didn't sign on to it. And there are many concerns. Most are unintended consequences, concerns about free speech, the impact on businesses that rely on TikTok. And so you have all these things happening, but kind of, if your listeners hadn't already picked up, I'm much more of a House observer than a Senate observer. And kind of my ringside seat to all of this is there is a very different sense of urgency in the two chambers. TikTok could influence the presidential campaign, and you feel the urgency out of the White House, and you feel the urgency coming out of the House. And the Senate just does not seem to grasp how quickly things fall apart in the House. And it has a healthy margin in the House right now, but Donald Trump is not necessarily in favor of this bill. And I've seen many, many bills over the last few months just fall apart in a matter of hours. And it just seems the Senate does not recognize how unstable the House is and how quickly things can fall apart. And it, just based on my sense of zero urgency.
So the Senate, Republican senators seem far less receptive to taking marching orders from Trump than members of the House. Certainly some senators do, but most of them are like, okay, Mr. Trump, we're gonna do our thing. You're saying that, say this does get through the Senate and goes back to the House, Trump could ramp up his suddenly pro-TikTok rhetoric and House Republicans would turn on a dime and drop it.
I don't have any reporting to indicate that. I've just lived through this several times on other issues. So, I mean, I don't want to oversell it, but that can happen. Conservative media can suddenly decide to flip on it. And these members, I've seen them turn on a dime. And so it's just my instinct that, you know, when you walk across the rotunda at the Capitol, it's just two different planets. I'm not necessarily faulting the Senate. I think most of America has not really grasped how unstable the House is, even despite everything we've witnessed in the last 6 months.
It should be said, banning TikTok is popular. I think 62% of Americans either support a TikTok ban or are agnostic about it. Only a third oppose a ban. So we'll see if the political interest of these House members runs up against the whims of Donald Trump and his donors, who happen to be TikTok investors. We shall see. Abby, thanks for joining me. I will see you in D.C. Wednesday night for a little puck gathering at the French ambassador's residence. I'm excited to see you.
I can't wait to see you, old friend.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.